Welcome, friends, fans, and colleagues. This is Karen Tate, and thank you for tuning in today to Voices of the Sacred Feminine. And wow, are we not living in incredible times? Sometimes it feels so surreal. No doubt you feel that way too, I would imagine. Here we're living in a global pandemic, and you know, for those of you who are not in the United States, we are probably the hot spot on the globe for death and destruction. We have about 112,000 dead, 2 million infected, and still our president does nothing. You know, it's like Nero fiddling while Rome burns. You know, it seems that he thinks if he just ignores this and pretends that that nothing's going on, you know, that he will win re-election. Well, I sure hope he doesn't. I don't think we can survive it. But anyway, you know, good news as well. You know, maybe it sounds crazy to some of you saying that the protests in the street are good news, but I think it's an incredible sign that humanity is evolving. You know, to a higher plane, to you know, a world of more compassion and equality. And, you know, I like to think that, you know, once we start working seriously on this racism issue, systematic and institutionalized racism, I'm sorry, my guest is making a lot of noise in the background. I'm sure he doesn't realize he is, but anyway, I'm hoping that once we get past, we get in deep, you know, fixing the issues of systematic and institutionalized racism, that maybe we can start talking about misogyny and sexism and the role that capitalism is playing in destroying the poor and the middle class. So I guess this is what it looks like to be on the road to humanity's recovery. At least that's the way I'm looking at it. So they say a country is or a government is like a big ship. You have to, when you steer it, you have to steer slowly in increments. Things don't happen fast. Well, I guess there is some some reality to that, because sometimes things happen slow, but then look how, these protests have sprung up across the globe and how quickly things are changing. So anyway, I am really hopeful. You know, after November, we'll get a new president, and the world can, be a better place. That's my hope anyway. So, that being said, let me, kind of refocus to today's show, which, no doubt will have some threads of parallel topic. I have with me calling in from the UK, Luke Eastwood, and our topic is taking a Gnostic path. Luke is an author, activist, and social justice activist as well, and he's calling in today to discuss, finding your own way, taking a Gnostic path, and we'll delve into how we might be in control of our own destiny. We'll talk a little bit about the pandemic, how it's both a trap and an opportunity for humanity, how we can choose to not go along with the program, as he calls it. We'll, get him to explain that a bit. We'll talk about choosing one's own spiritual path, how creativity is a great tool also to overcome fear and depression. You know, no doubt, those are things many people are struggling with right now. Luke will talk to listeners about his views. We're all controlled from birth, and we hardly even realize it. I want to hear a lot more about that. He grew up in Scotland, but moved to England. He's led a very interesting life. He began training as a druid and also a horticulturist, and he's a musician as well. His activism was with Greenpeace and McLibel in London, and he set up an Extinction Rebellion group in Kerry in 2019. He wrote a small book, How to Save the Planet, and it was published last autumn. He's released a new album of electronica in March called Fifth Element. And he's also written a Druid Primer, another book called The Journey about religion and spirituality, and something a little bit more local, you know, to where he is, I believe in Ireland now, Kerry Folktales. So Luke, welcome to Voices of the Sacred Feminine.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad you're calling in too. I always like it when we get, you know, guests from across the pond. You know, we can try to compare notes on, you know, how we're seeing each other's countries evolve or devolve. You know, however you look at it, and. You know, I was so glad when you reached out to me with this topic. So, you know, why don't we start with what do you mean specifically by the topic, finding your own way, taking a Gnostic path? I mean, I know a lot of people know about Gnosticism from, you know, from Pagels. Is that what you're talking about, or do you mean something, you know, Gnosticism reconstructed? You know, fill us in a bit.
Well, you're right. It does depend where you're coming from, what you think Gnosticism means. You know, for me, I think it's regardless of what religion you come from or what background, it's really about finding a sense of your own past, your own beliefs. And because it's just guaranteed that you're going to be influenced by your parents, by school, by whatever. Most people probably grow up with some kind of religious education. Or even the opposite, where, you know, their parents might be staunch atheists and you're educated to become an atheist, for instance, or a Catholic or Muslim or whatever it may happen to be. And Gnosticism really is about finding your own connection to whatever you believe deity is or spirit or whatever you wish to call it, you know, call it God or the goddess or the universe, even some people might choose to define it as.
Okay, all right. So we're talking Gnosticism in a very big umbrella kind of way, as opposed to like the Gnosticism of old, so to speak, of Jesus.
Yeah, I was very interested in the Gnosticism of Jesus. I managed to get hold of all the apocryphal gospels and what they call the pseudepigrapha, which is what they describe as bogus, but well, it's hard to know. It depends who you're talking to, whether it's fake or not, you know. But yeah, I was really interested in that, and then I moved on from that into a wider sense of, because I mean, I started from a Christian background, from a Roman Catholic background, and then about the age of 15, I started rebelling against it. My uncle introduced me to Buddhism, and I went to stay with them, my uncle and aunt, while my dad was really sick with peritonitis. So, you know, I went away for a week or two, stay with them, and you know, he actually lent me the Dharmapada teachings of the first Buddha, Siddhartha, and that really blew my mind. And so when I came back and I was like, oh, wow, that's very different from what I know so far. And, you know, they weren't too happy about this. So it made me give the book back and the little Buddha figure. And moving on from that, I thought, well, what about, you know, where does all this stuff come from? And going back in history, you know, I discovered there's more than four Gospels. And I just kept on going and going, and my kind of, I suppose, my worldview expanded beyond Christianity into lots of religions, paganism, and, well, became really interested in all of the major world religions and started looking
right.
at all of them.
So, and that makes sense to me. I mean, I grew up in a very small Catholic bubble in the southern part of the United States, and it's like you don't know what you don't know, you know, when you grow up in these bubbles, and it's really maybe hard to even find your own way, to find your authentic self, to find what you really believe, if you have such a narrow view of the world, of religion. Is that what you're referring to when you say we're all controlled from birth, but we don't realize it? You know, that unless we make that effort to expand outside the bubble we grew up in, you know, what we hear in the pulpit from the church on the corner, or what we hear at the kitchen table, is that the control you're talking about?
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. And that applies to religion and spirituality, but you could say it also applies to other areas of life as well, you know. You know, such things like values about, you know, being told, oh, you've got to go and get a great education, go off and get a really good job and live this kind of life. And, you know, you might not be aware that there's so many alternatives about how you could choose to live. And, you know, and to either maybe by pure luck or you see something different, You may not challenge any of this at all. I mean, quite often I think that what often creates the beginnings of a different approach or a Gnostic way of thinking about things is often a crisis, you know?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think if you're lucky, something might happen earlier on in your life, so, you know, maybe you don't end up having a moment of realization when you're 40 or 50 or 60, and then you go, oh my God, you know, it's a bit late in the day then. I mean, better late than never if you expand your way of thinking and you evolve, but, you know, it's much better if this happens to you when you're younger, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I can really relate to that, Luke, because, you know, we grow up and we're told that this is what you're supposed to do in life. You know, if you're a woman, you're supposed to get married, have babies. I mean, that's expanded a bit today from when, you know, I was, in my late teens and 20s. Fortunately, I took a childless by choice kind of, path, but so many women end up, being a mother, and maybe it really wasn't what they wanted. You know, maybe they really didn't want to get married. Maybe they wanted to go to college. Maybe they wanted to travel. But I think women are stuck in a box, maybe more so than men. Things are changing, but with fundamentalist religion and stuff, I think women are more stuck than men. But men get stuck too, you know. You have to be the macho man, otherwise they say you're effeminate. You know, you have to play sports, or something's wrong with you. But I think we also change too. As life goes on, what we maybe even authentically wanted out of life when we're 20 might not be what we want when we're 50.
Totally. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I agree with you.
So,
I would say, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, what do you
say?
So, okay, you go, then I'll go.
Okay, so I was going to say, I agree with you totally about what you said about women. I think it also happens to men as well. Men do get trapped, but you look at the way institutions and religion is run, it seems to be favoring more, obviously it favors the men more, and the women are sort of institutionally pushed into very defined and restricted roles. But in truth, both sexes are trapped in this kind of cage, but it's worse for women.
Yeah, because, I mean, I would imagine some men might not want to be fathers, you know. Or, you know, we get this, we're also indoctrinated that you should, if you can afford it, you should go into debt to go to college. I mean, you know, here in the United States, you can end up in, you know, $100,000 debt to go to college, which is insane. And maybe you don't really want that life in a suit for the rest of your life. You know, maybe you're the type that would rather be a vagabond, or not work in an office your entire life. It feels like there ought to be some sort of, I don't know, teaching in school to maybe expand our minds that there are other options out there rather than just sort of the status quo, one size fits all kind of future or life or choices.
I totally agree, you know, and, you know, you get these kind of stereotypes of things, you know. You get some people who, you know, maybe really academic, and then you've got other people who have totally different skill set, and they tend to be devalued, I think, you know. The arts and creativity, or even a lot of practical physical things, are really kind of devalued. And like you mentioned about the office job and all that, a lot of people aspire to, you know, become an accountant, not maybe because that's what they really want, but because they've been pushed in that direction, you know.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of help learning to find our authentic self, and and I think maybe the way we grow up, I mean, like our parents did, and maybe their grandparents before them, we're just gonna follow in the family business, or I don't know, you know, it just feels like no one says to you, there are lots of options out there. I think more of us get the message that the world is very small and our options are limited. I wonder, though, Luke, I gather from your viewpoint, and maybe your Druid background helped you, how can we choose to be more in control? How can we choose to realize that we've been controlled from birth, and we have other options?
Well, I think one of the great things now is there is so much more information out there. Like, you know, like I said about getting that, you know, the Dharmapada, if my uncle hadn't given me that, I probably wouldn't have discovered it for years. There was no internet then, you know. And, if you live, like, in a big city right down the road from a giant library, you know, you can find stuff. But, I mean, I lived in a tiny place with, like, a teeny little library. So I probably would never have discovered that book for years and years. That's just one example. So I think, you know, trying to reach out, like you said earlier, you don't know what you don't know. It's just, if you just try to put your, like, feelers out, like a, you know, like a snail with his antennae, slowly trying to see what's going on. And as time goes by, you you discover more and more of what feels right for you. I think a lot of it is gut instinct, really, because, you know, when you feel like you're stumbling along in the dark and you don't know what you're looking for, but when you do discover it, I feel that your inner voice will tell you, well, this is what I've been looking for.
And you know, I'm thinking too that, and I don't know if there's much talk over where you're living, because I think you're in Ireland right now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
I've been here for the last 20 years.
Okay. I don't know if there's much talk there, but, you know, we're starting to get glimmers here of about something called universal basic income. And I can't help but think if we did have a universal basic income, that might give us a little bit more freedom to try different options rather than maybe get trapped on a path that really doesn't work for us. I don't know. You have any thoughts about that?
That is an interesting idea, and that could possibly work. I think one of the benefits here in Ireland is the cost of education is relatively cheap. Like, for instance, if you don't have any real income, the government will pay for you. The fees, say, to go to university are 3,000 euros a year, which is roughly around $3,000. So, that's reasonably affordable, even if you had to pay that yourself, and you figured, right, you could be a mature student and you didn't get the chance to go before, and you apply, you get in. It's affordable. It's not like it's going to cost you $100,000 and you've got to bankrupt yourself to learn a new skill. I think that's very viable here, that kind of thing. That could work very well. But, you know, if you're on universal basic income in, say, in the States, I assume you're expected to pay for that all yourself, your education. Am I right in thinking that?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no free education here. I mean, everything's been turned into a commodity, and the costs are outrageous. So, especially if you make the wrong choice early on, and you maybe get married and have a kid, you're trapped. You know, you don't have much option to switch gears and take another path here. You know, you're really sort of got your feet in concrete boots, and, you know, you got to just keep plugging along. I get so annoyed here in the States when our politicians tell us, it's not as, you know, the grass isn't greener, you know, over in Europe, you know, because Bernie Sanders over here has been talking about, you know, free education and, free health care and like a lot of the stuff you guys have there in Europe. And, you know, they've been trying to convince Americans that it's shoddy and, why would you want that? You know, you're just a lazy taker if you want the same benefits that, the rest of the Western world has. You talk about, choosing not to go along with the program. And I think in a way that's what I'm saying too. You know, our politicians would have us just be, you know, cogs in a wheel, you know, good little Uber consumers, keeping our nose to the grindstone, even if we're miserable, even if we're not fulfilling the life we would rather lead. If we make the wrong choices early in life, we're kind of stuck. Maybe doing that for decades. Talk a little bit about choosing not to go with the program or not needing a guru, as you say.
Yeah, well, I'll start myself, I suppose, I know best about my own life. You said about, you know, the office job and all this, and, you know, I did a degree, and it was the wrong degree, and luckily enough, it didn't cost an absolute fortune. I had a student loan, but it didn't take me very long to pay it off, because it was minuscule, and unlike, you know, I don't know what people have to pay in interest in America, but the student loans here, it was very cheap. It was like 1% or something like that, the interest. So it was minuscule. So that was possible to pay that off and then, you know, go on and think about your career without this enormous pile of debt that you've mentioned. So, you know, I realized I'd picked the wrong thing. Then I thought, well, what can I do? So I kind of diverted into a slightly different area, which was graphic design and a bit of journalism. But, you know, I still ended up working in London, you know, going across the, you know, the transport system, getting up really early, getting home late, working really hard. And, you know, I did get married and have a child. And, you know, I loved my family, but I did feel trapped, not by them, but by the system that, you know, here I am, I'm stuck. I'd always had these dreams of, like, you know, having a big field somewhere and putting up a wind generator and growing all my own food. And there I was stuck in London in a tiny apartment, you know, going on the you know, what they call the tube, like the equivalent of the subway, off to work. And you just feel like you're living in a tin can and your life is all mapped out for you. So I personally decided, right, how can we get out of this, not just me, us as a family, you know, this kind of box. And, I mean, part of that for me was the kind of inner work of your spiritual life really is the beginning point, and trying to figure out what do you want, what do you believe in. And I would say, in a way, that what you believe in comes first, what you think is important in your life and in life generally, your values. And from then you kind of figure out, what do I want to do? And then you've got to try and figure out, okay, so how do I get there? You know, you feel like you're stuck in this awful box and you want to be in this different place. And the way the system is designed, it's really difficult to get out of your box, as you pointed out. And you really got to figure out some kind of strategy to navigate your way out of all of the paths that are pre-designed for you and forge your own path. And that isn't an easy thing to do, but it can be done.
Well, and I guess I want to say I totally agree with you. I mean, I hadn't thought about maybe the spiritual coming first, that maybe the spiritual would help you figure out where you want to be. But I can see that could, you know, potentially, you know, be guideposts. I mean, especially if you have a Druid background, you know, if you revere nature, you don't want to live in a concrete jungle or, like you said, a tin can. You know, and especially, you know, with the subway system, you know, you're underground, you know, you could be underground most of the time, you know, going from connection to connection and, you know, you're underground more than you see the light of day almost, you know. And you know, you're making me think too about this book I read by, I forget whether she was in the UK or, well, in either England or Ireland. I think she went back and forth. Sharon Blackie wrote this book, If Women Rose Rooted, and she's basically talking about escaping the wasteland. And she meant, you know, what we're talking about here, you know, choosing a different path, finding a way to make that break, you know, out of the you know, out of the status quo, you know, not to go along with the program and find a life that's more meaningful to you. You know, when you get up every morning, it's not just the same, you know, kind of miserable routine. You know, I kind of call it like being a hamster on a wheel, you know.
yeah.
But what I want to ask you, Luke, is, you know, myself, you know, having grown up in the South, and I hate to disparage the South. I mean, there's a lot good there. I mean, I ended up leaving when I was 30, and I moved to California, and it was the best thing I ever did. I shudder at the thought of what my life would have been if I had stayed there and not moved. But I realized from living there are a lot of people who just aren't very intellectually curious. You know, they are very content with someone telling them what to do, whether it be their priest or their boss or their father, and they just kind of go through life like sheep, you know? I mean, I call them sheeple. I mean, have you encountered that? And do you, I mean, are they a lost cause? I don't know, your thoughts.
Well, possibly, yeah. Some people are going to just go from A to B in their life, and they won't look out the window. They'll just be head, you know, eyes forward, and that will be their entire life. And, you know, I do believe that people have different lifetimes. They believe in the concept and reincarnation, and maybe some people will have a very quiet and very straightforward life where they're not challenged. But, you know, some of these people, of the sheeple, that's a great term actually, they will wake up. Something will happen, and they will suddenly be switched on. So I say people are a lost cause. Well, not necessarily, you know. There's all kinds of things that can happen in your life that will trigger suddenly thinking, hey, oh, I've been following the program and this is not working. Something's not right, and you start to reevaluate, you know. But you mentioned about gurus. I mean, a guru can maybe awaken you in some ways. They teach you stuff. But at the end of the day, I think it's really signposts. You know, you can end up following a new program, which is the guru's program. So instead of slavishly, you know, following the, you know, the program you were born with and educated into, you just switch to a different one. So you carry on not really thinking for yourself, but following someone else's ideas to the letter. And that's what I meant about, you know, not having a guru, that you don't need one. Because it's great to have teachers. It's great to have people who can advise you, who can help you to grow, but I don't think it's wise to ever put anyone on such a pedestal that you just accept everything they say without evaluating what they're talking about.
I agree. I agree totally, because you're just trading one box for another box. You're trading one person trying to control you for maybe another person trying to control your thoughts and who you are and your choices. But wouldn't you say that for some people, maybe especially when you're younger, I don't know, maybe it's equally as hard when you get older for some people, to go it alone, to have the personal inner fortitude to find your own path, to sort of throw off conformity, if you will. I mean, it's hard not to conform. Do you think it takes a different type of person, or how can you maybe take baby steps toward nonconformity till you really find yourself?
Well, you know, I think it's really interesting, but I think you're right. I think the further back in time you go, the harder it is. I think I look at young people, I look at my own daughter and her friends and other people that I know who are younger than me, and I'm quite shocked at how enlightened. Some of them are already, that they've just broken out the box already, and they're not conforming. You know, and if they are conforming in certain areas of their life, it'll be because they've chosen that suits them, not because they're just blindly following what you're supposed to do. So I would say for people of my age, I'm 50, you know, it can be hard. For my parents' generation, it was, you know, much harder again. And, you know, for younger people, I think the difficulty is much less for them, that they're able to break out of it much quicker.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I'm seeing, you know, with the protesters in the street here, so many of them are millennials. I also seem to think, you know, I hope this isn't, you know, just confirmation bias, but it seems to me millennials don't have a lot of the isms that my generation grew up with. You know, they're not homophobic, they're not racist, they're not sexist, at least not so much. I'm sure there's some that are in their bubbles, you know. I mean, you know, we have the, you know, the white supremacists and the KKK and the toxic masculine types, you know, they exist too, but it feels like, at least here in the United States, that there are a lot of people who are breaking the mold, so to speak, and are trying to do something different than their parents. Why don't you comment on that, and then we're going to take a break, Luke.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's a different situation in Europe, and also, depending on, you know, from one country to another. I mean, in Ireland, for instance, has been a really traditional country and very conservative. And there's been, you know, Ireland's been a massive victim of racism. But at the same time, there's also been a huge amount of racism in Ireland, too. And like a xenophobia, fear of foreigners. And, you know, no one ever came to Ireland for ages, for decades, except on holiday. And then suddenly around, well, about 30 years ago, it began to change a bit. And then it really began to change 20 years ago. So, you know, that was a massive shock to a lot of people. So, you know, like you say, the young people, like my daughter, for instance, her attitude would be completely different to a lot of people that grew up in Ireland 20 or 30 years before. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really positive thing to see that, you know, change can happen. And not just a small change, but fundamental, different, more open way of looking at the world.
Okay, and I want to make some comparisons with that. You know, how we're looking at these, you know, these life choices as Gnosticism, and maybe get into some of the political stuff that's going on. You know, the COVID, the marches in the street. I want to get into that a bit when we get back, but I need to take a break now because we have a word from Joe Carson, and I want to play for listeners something from a review of Joe Carson's book called Celebrate Wildness. We'll be right back, Luke.
Thanks.
This is from Jonathan Nightshade, a traditional craft practitioner and researcher, writing about Joe Carson's book Celebrate Wildness, Magic, Mirth, and Love on the Farafaria Path. I love this book. How special this work is and how appreciated. As someone who was young in the 1970s and through the years only found snippets of information on Farafaria, one of the first modern pagan paths, this book comes as an artistic revelation of the core practices of the way of the goddess and gods, reborn for the next age of the divine maiden. She has clearly introduced the historical background, philosophy, and ritual practices of the joyous wilderness mysteries of the fairy faith, illuminated by the marvelous pagan art of Farafaria's founder, Fred Adams. I was very pleased that the high quality production of this oversized volume makes it a collectible work of art, as well as a testament to the visionary philosophy of Fred Adams. I feel blessed that I received a copy. I will treasure it and look forward to the next book for more of the deep philosophy and ritual practice of Farifaria.
Celebrate Wildness is a dense art book quality hardcover book. You can get it for just $45 from the Farifaria website at farifaria.org. That's FERIA.org.
So just to clarify, Joe Carson's lovely book, Celebrate Wildness, is available only at farifaria.org, and I'll spell that for you. It's FERIA.org. So if you are just joining us at the middle point in the show, I am speaking to Luke Eastwood, and he's calling us from Ireland, and we're talking about taking a Gnostic path. And it's not really the Ellen Pagel's kind of Gnosticism. It's got its roots in finding your own spirituality, but also finding your authentic self, trying to find you know, what this life is for you, you know, instead of being trapped in the status quo, going along with the program, you know, being stuck in a box that society or culture or religion maybe puts you in, and you know, and how we break out of that. And we're about to turn this you know, these ideas of Gnosticism look at it through the lens of what's happening out there in the world. So, Luke, you know, you talked about the COVID-19 crisis is both a trap and an opportunity for humanity. Maybe speak to that a little bit and, you know, how it fits into your, you know, your Gnostic, you know, your contemporary Gnostic ideology.
Okay. Well, you know, the way I see it, you have competing narratives. You know, just to simplify, you've got, like, you know, left and right politics. You've got what's portrayed in the media. And then you've even got disagreements between scientists about what is the right thing to do. And, I mean, this is unprecedented. This hasn't happened since the Spanish flu, which was 100 years ago. So we're really in a place where we can't make that much in the way of comparisons. So we have to find our way through this mess. And, there, you know, these narratives competing with each other, you know, even say, you've got to do this and do that. And someone else is saying, oh, you know, no, you don't want to do that. You've got to do this instead. And, you know, for obviously, at the end of the day, the first thing you've got to think about is safety and health. That's the number one thing with this. But trying to figure out who is telling the truth, who is giving the right answers, who is giving the right advice, and, you know, depending on where you look, you're going to get completely different answers about that. So I think you have to try to use your own intelligence as much as you can. You've got to use your own sense of judgment, your gut instinct, and also try and look at different points of view, and not just one point of view. And then when you've done this, you've looked at the different points of view, you've tried to consult your inner voice, you know, maybe look at it from a spiritual perspective. Some people have spiritual guidance, other people don't. You think about it from a rational and a spiritual and emotional point of view, and then try, hopefully you might have some kind of an answer that makes sense to you.
I get that, you know, because I mean, I think to a certain extent we all fall prey to confirmation bias, where we kind of look for things that sort of support our ideology or our viewpoint. But you know, it has been a struggle here to know what to do. I mean, I know, for instance, for myself, you know, I'm a liberal living in a conservative county. I'm a Democrat living in a Republican county. So, you know, I am very frustrated when I go out and nobody's wearing a mask. And here it's almost along political lines. You know, if you're a supporter of the president, then you don't wear a mask. And, you know, I don't know what their thinking is on that. I mean, some of them have said, oh, it's about freedom. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to force me to wear a mask. But, you know, you just wonder if the critical thinking has gone out the window. Is it all about, you know, supporting, you know, what the president stands for, and they will even put themselves at risk and other people at risk by not doing basic common sense things like, you know, wearing a mask out in public and keeping distance. It seems irresponsible, but I'm sure to them they have their, you know, I sound like you know, just a crazy liberal, you know. I mean, I don't know. Do you think the, you know, this epidemic is going to take us to a better place on the other end? I mean, I can't imagine that there would have been these protests in the street if we didn't have so many people without jobs and sheltered in. You know, they simply wouldn't have had the time to do it. So maybe, you know, maybe these protests against racism and police brutality is one of the first signs of good that will come out of the pandemic.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's fantastic that so many people are actually standing up and saying, no, this is wrong. I mean, I think some of the violence that's happened is really unfortunate and unhelpful, but the process needed to happen because, you know, I mean, the day after he was killed, you know, I mean, I watched him, the footage of him being murdered on YouTube the day after, and it was absolutely shocking, appalling. I couldn't, you know, it's very disturbing to see that footage, and, you know, I mean, I don't know who filmed that, but whoever they were, you know, thank God they did, and they put it up online so the world actually got to see this, well, an evil crime, you know. And people do need to stand up against these things. If people just stand there and say nothing, then it's just enables such things to carry on happening. So I think that was very necessary. And I think one of the problems in the world is the way democracy functions. People don't really get much of a voice. Whether you vote left or right, you know, you get your vote every 4 or 5 years, and then you don't really get any say in what happens in the interim period, you know. There are a few exceptions. Switzerland is a country that has a lot of referenda where people are able to vote on various issues, and the whole country gets to vote on lots of different things. But that's really unusual.
Yeah, I mean, well, we feel like that here, too. I mean, even when we vote, we don't always get what we thought we voted for. Or, you know, money. Money buys access, and money buys the laws that are written. I mean, it's no secret here, lobbyists actually write the laws and then pass them along to the politicians. I mean, it's pretty messed up, you know.
Yeah,
and that's
corrupt.
Another thing that, Yeah, that needs to be fixed here. I mean, even the Democratic Party, I mean, if you were a Bernie Sanders supporter, you know this. If you were a Hillary supporter, you don't believe it. The DNC was basically being controlled by Hillary Clinton. And when Bernie and Hillary, went head to head in 2016, there was shenanigans going on in the primaries in the different states. And when Bernie Sanders supporters actually filed suit against the Democratic National Committee Party, the DNC lawyers actually said to the judge that we're like a private club. We have no obligation to support who the voters support. They could literally make a decision in a smoky back room and put that person up as the Democratic nominee. And, so it's almost as if the primaries when we vote are a farce, That was pretty demoralizing for me to realize, back in 2016. And I think that's when I realized that it was even worse than I thought, It's like the political parties are just different degrees of evil or degrees of inequity.
I would say that virtually every country has become corrupted by lobbying. I think there's only one country I can think of, Bhutan, which decided that they would become completely organic. They moved to 100% organic farming. They actually have a pretty good government. But nobody cares about Bhutan, and they didn't bother to go and lobby there because there's nothing worth taking. But any country that's got anything that's worth, commercializing has been lobbied to death. And it's the lobbyists that are controlling all the parties. So you get like a different flavor of corruption. And I think if we're going to have a better world, that lobbying will have to be banned outright, completely, everywhere. And that's one of the things I said about opportunities. It's like we've given an opportunity to rewrite, to clean the slate and decide, right, the whole world's in chaos, so what would we like to change? What would we like to have going forward? Maybe a completely different political system where these lobbyists don't get the chance to corrupt everything.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we definitely do have to change the system because greed is controlling all the levers of society. Our tax dollars go to billionaires while our infrastructure crumbles. The middle class is being decimated while billionaires, make 300 to 500 times more than their workers. I mean, the inequities are becoming obscene. And I don't know, I was heartened to see the thousands and millions of people out in the street, because I can imagine if they gathered over this police brutality and racism, then the next things are going to be government corruption, unfettered, unregulated capitalism, here in the United States, Americans are so afraid of the word socialism, they don't even understand what democratic socialism is. I interviewed an economist on the show who said that in our in our educational system, a teacher could not even talk about the benefits of socialism or democratic socialism if they expected to keep their job or get tenure. So people, academia is distorted, and people fear what they don't understand, what they don't know, even if it's for their own good. it is. But I know you think creativity is a really important tool to overcome fear and depression. Why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you know, the spirituality is a very powerful tool, like you're saying about all that. You know, the sense of morality is so important. But on top of that, harnessing your own part, your creativity, really can help with finding your way in life. And like you said, it also can be very helpful if you are in a state of fear or in a state of depression or anxiety too. One of the things that the Druid path is bardism, which is all about creativity. And I do believe that all people have creative potential. But what happens is so many, like we talked about earlier, you end up becoming, you know, the bean counter, or, you know, you're sat in some gloomy office, you know, organizing paper clips to be shipped to the other side of the world. And you kind of maybe have dreamed of being a painter when you were a little kid, or maybe you never even got the chance to think about what you might have done. You just went straight down that road because life pushed you that way. And I think if you get an opportunity to express yourself, that can be so helpful, that expressing your inner life, inner turmoil even, if that's expressed creatively, that it can help you to digest that and transform it into something better.
Okay, well, I totally agree. And I mean, I think there is a concerted effort to thwart that, you know, because here in the United States, the first thing that gets cut from schools when there's budget cuts is the arts. You know, and I think that's by design. I really do, because they, you know, they want people to just be the bean counter. You know, they don't want people to explore their creativity and start thinking outside that box, because it could be dangerous.
Yeah, I think so. And I think most people suffer from depression at some point in their life. I mean, myself, I've had two very serious periods of depression. The first time was when my marriage collapsed, and that was horrific. And, you know, I think it was only really the thought of my daughter not having a father in her life that stopped me from, you know, driving into a truck coming the other way, you know, when I'm way to work. I was thought about this, hey, if I just drive into this truck here, it's all over, and I won't have to worry about everything anymore, and I feel, you know, I won't feel anything. I didn't do that, obviously, because I'm here, but, you know, part of me getting better was creativity, and also I did get a lot of help with things like going to yoga. I went to acupuncture, which I found amazingly beneficial, because I was so stressed, and I had the acupuncture, and I just broke down crying. And I, you know, like I was saying about conditioning, I actually apologized to the lady that was doing the acupuncture for crying. I felt embarrassed, and I felt, you know, sort of ashamed of myself for having a big cry in front of this woman who I didn't know. And she was so compassionate and just said, look, it's okay, you've had like the shittiest time. Don't allow yourself this. Don't stop it. And that was really great. And then, you know, my creativity started coming back again. The things I'd done when I was younger came back to me. And, you know, I as I explored that more, I began to feel stronger in myself. And, you know, it doesn't have to be music or art. It could be poetry. It could be even doing the garden, or, you know, something completely different. But if you can find a way to express both your joys and your fears through creativity, I think it really helps you to deal with what you might have internalized.
Yeah, I think that is so important, Luke. Thank you for being so candid and sharing that, because I think so many people just go through life abused and exploited and unhappy, and it's the system, you know, it's the system. And I don't think we were put on this earth to live the kind of life our systems demand of us. And I think the more of us that start to get that idea that it's unhealthy to stick to the program, unless, you know, you're one of these unique people that likes likes the system, likes the status quo. You know, I would imagine people who are maybe benefiting from it thrive on it. I'm sure there are those types. But for those of us that, the system sickens us emotionally, physically, psychologically, we really have to, I think, find the courage to find outlets as you did, you know, with your creativity and alternative medicine as well. Here we have, we have religion that tells people yoga is evil, you know, that when you're, yeah. When you're doing yoga or meditate, the devil can enter you, you know. I mean, it's just insane the lengths they will go to control us, you know, and keep us a sheeple, you know. Well, Luke, I've enjoyed talking to you, and you know we're coming to the end of the hour. I want to give you the opportunity for a last word here. Is there anything maybe you would like to share with listeners I haven't asked, or mention your books or whatever? I leave it to you for the last word.
No, thank you very much for having me, first of all, Matt. I would say the most important thing in life is not only to have an open mind, because that's very important, what I've been talking about, but just to really stick to what you believe in, whatever you believe is right, what is the right way to live, what you think your core values are, that is the most important thing, that you live your life by that, because that's one of the biggest problems of the world, is people, for whatever reasons, don't stick to their guns, stick to their values of what they really think they should do. I mean, we discussed, there's so many reasons why that doesn't happen, but I think if we're going to get to a better world, which I'd say if you asked 99% of people, they would like to see a better world. They'd like to find some way forward to make it a better world. But if you don't really, you know, that's why things have stayed the same, why the status quo is still here, is because people are somehow convinced not to follow through on what they really know to be right. So I would encourage people to just stick to that, even if it's going to cost you, even if it's going to hurt, possibly, that it's more important that you do that than just go to sleep and have a nice, quiet life. Because, you know, there's future generations to think of. And I think we all want a better world, for not for ourselves only, but for future generations. And if we do go to sleep and just carry on, then nothing will change. And I'd say that's the number one thing. Just stick to what you really believe in.
Yeah, good point, Luke. I know I think about people I've heard from that, talk about the things they've had to do to keep their jobs, and it's kind of soul sucking. In a way, you know, what some employers require of their employees, you know, that just came to mind when you said that, or what people think religions require of them, or sometimes even what our own family, requires of us that really just isn't in sync with our values, so... Well, Luke, thank you so much for calling in. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I'm so glad to know you and to know you're out there in the world putting your sort of energy out there, because we definitely do need it. So, listen, you and your family
thank
stay
safe. Thank
you
so much for having me.
And, yeah, and keep in touch. And if anything else comes up that you think would make an interesting show, you get back in touch with me, okay?
I will do. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
I have too. Thank you, Luke. All right, friends. Well, that about does it for us for today. I want to thank you for tuning in. And just want to mention Luke's website. It is LukeEastwood.com. Or his musical website is Children of Dub, as in Dublin, I believe, childrenofdub.com. If you want to explore Luke a bit more and how Luke has expressed his creativity. And, well, and that that does it for me. I will be back with you again next week. Let me just look real quick. And if you haven't hit the follow button yet on the show page, you won't get a notice in your email inbox. But I will be back with you next Wednesday and at 11 o'clock. And I will be doing a special show of my own next Thursday. So you'll hear from me twice next week. All right. Stay safe out there. And may Isis embrace you in her golden wings. Bye for now.